Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
I want to mourn the field train and tell them that we love them.
I've looked at clear cuts and burnt forest and I felt outraged.
We are the crowning glory of God's creation, and all of nature was made for us. Nature is more productive because of us, not less.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
It's time.
It's the Wretched Radio mail call delivery bag Q&A infotainment nationwide extravaganza featuring your voicemails, correspondences, communiques, dispatches, memorandums, and missives.
Any special message for all the kids watching at home?
What we need right now is a clear message to the people of this country.
You have 1,200 messages.
That is a bit above average.
Now here's your host, Todd Freakishly Tall Friel.
The mail is here!
Ooh! I was early. This is Wretched Radio. When you see, do you ever not see wretched things on the internet? When you stumble across something wretched, pretty much, when was the last time you saw a good news story? Really, I think you have to go to websites that call themselves good news stories. And you know how many subscribers they have?
Not very many.
That family, pretty much. When you see something wretched, it doesn't have to be ugly. It just has to be something theological, good, bad, or otherwise. It's a sermon, an article, a story, whatever. Would you kindly send it to idea@wretched.org? And if you'd like to text questions, comments, conundrums, snarks, whatever, the texter machine number is 877-282-2337.
All right, this is from Andrew. Todd, can Christians participate in sports like boxing, football, and paintball? Or does this mean they're thinking evil thoughts because of the punching, the tackling, and the shooting?
Could be. Don't have to be. Could just be an athletic competition. Boxing, I think, is kind of a separate category that warrants some caveats, but you know, when we all get together on a field and say, here are the rules, fellas, you might get tackled. Yeah, it could hurt a little bit too. And you all agree to the terms. Now, if you're out on the field and it's like, that dude gets on my nose and I'm going to crush him and he might not walk when I'm done. Okay, well, then you're sinning. But you don't have to be. I don't know. I can't say for this. Was it a fellow or fellowette?
It was anonymous, I believe.
See, it's hard to know these.
No, things. It was Andrew. I'm sorry.
It was Andrew.
Andrew.
Well, there could be some girls that identify as Andrew. We are living in the 21st century. I don't know if this applies to Andrew or not, but I find it fascinating that athletics and the arts tend to be a particular area of struggle for a great number of Christians. Because they see it as a realm that is so often sinful, they wonder, ooh, can a Christian participate in that? Or am I not doing a Christian type of thing? And I think we need to remember that it's not the realm, it's the priest that participates in the realm. It's not the activity. It's the priest that is participating in that activity. In other words, you are a kingdom of priests. You are a royal priest. You bring that with you wherever you go, athletic field, to the bakery, to the warehouse, to the law firm, to your family, to the park, whatever you do. Because when we start identifying realms, I think, and obviously we can apply some wisdom to things like Hollywood. But when considering realms, we need to remember for the most part, obviously there are some realms that would just be flat out sinful, but most realms, they're just neutral. It's what we bring to them. And when we start classifying them as being, if you will, more Christian-like than other activities, I think we've potentially got things backwards. If the activity itself is neutral, you either make it God glorifying or you make it sinful by the attitude that you bring to it. Furthermore, it can reveal a bit of a dualistic tendency in that we think that unless it's a specifically Christian thing, I'm not doing a Christian thing. That's wrong. If you are a royal priest playing football, then guess what? then it is God-pleasing and it is a Christian activity, not because of the activity, but because you're participating in it as a Christian. So the dualistic tendencies that we all tend to have, wow, that's what my next book is about, which will be out December 1st. Guess what? This was really sweet.
What?
This was really sweet. Erwin Lutzer, he wrote the foreword to the book,
mm-hmm.
and he recorded the intro.
Oh, yeah.
Because it has to, you know, these days, everything's got to be an audio something. And he actually recorded it. That guy, I'm telling you.
What a guy.
He's 84, I think, and he's still just a maniac. He travels and he preaches and he's writing a book, I think, on Karl Marx right now. Just extraordinary individual. I wrote the book because of this tendency that we all have to separate sacred and secular. And then we can even have classifications underneath each. Well, that secular activity, that was really secular. That one, like the arts, ooh, musicians, they struggle with this all the time. Should a Christian be in a band? Sure, as long as you're not doing sinful things, there's no distinction. It's not the activity. It is the priest who participates in them. The book will be out September 1st, 877-282-2337.
All right, this is from Philip. Todd, is it wrong for someone to be uncouth? Like if someone says hello to me and I don't say anything back, is that a sin? My hyperconscience condemns me for acts like this, but I don't want to disregard the guilt if it's from the Lord.
Wish I had more examples, because you should be couth. No, actually you can't, because that's not a word. It's only uncouth. That's the weirdest word. You would think if you've got a negation in front of it, then you must be able to do the actual word itself. But you can't. You can't be couth. You can only be uncouth. At least last time I checked, that was the rule about that word. And the rules just keep changing about words and grammar, don't they? Should you ever be uncouth? I think rightly understanding what that word means, just taking that word on its face, no, you can't be uncouth. And I think Ephesians 4, 28, 29, going into Ephesians 5, 3, no coarse jesting, nothing that's crude, nothing that's double entendre, nothing that's sexual, nothing that's vulgar. And I think vulgar is at least a cousin to being uncouth. So no, you don't want to be. Now, does that mean you need to hold your pinky up when you drink your tea? First of all, you probably shouldn't be drinking tea if you're a dude. Otherwise, you shouldn't be crass and coarse. You don't have to be like you've been trained to be a royal. No, you just be a human being, but you should never be crude or coarse or rough or gruff. I think falls underneath that entire category. We're just a different kind of people. We're just a different breed. I am so tempted at the moment to talk about 1 Peter, but I'm not going to do that because I've been talking about 1 Peter a lot, which I find 877-282-2337.
All right, this is from Pearl. She texted in and wanted to know, Todd, I struggle with cussing. I've been saved for almost 4 years now, but the cussing is in my mind only. I know that Christ calls for Christians to be holy, for he is holy, and I know that cussing's wrong, but how do I stop the cussing in my mind?
I'm struggling so hard to answer the question, because I was just thinking, if this woman lived on a farm and her brothers got mad at her, biblically, they couldn't cast her in with the swine. Yeah, that's right. That's what my mind was doing with the name Pearl. Are you sinning if it pops up in your mind? Are you committing a vulgarity that, going back to Ephesians 4, 28 through 5, 3, if that kind of pops into your mind? It's a fine line, not necessarily. If it's something that you're warring against, it's something that you've tried to purify from your life, not necessarily. It could, if you're just pretending on the outside not to do it because you know you can't say those things on the outside, but you really like saying them on the inside, well, then you'd still be sinning. But if it's maybe some training, a little bit of discipline, I don't think so. the temptation that hits your brain isn't you sinning until you grab the baton and run with it. Now, that gets a little tricky, doesn't it, to define exactly how and when that works and where you cross the line. And so you want to be careful how hard and fast you are with those rules. But I do believe that that is a general principle. Just because the devil tempts you in some way, well, that's him sinning. But you're not sinning. Just because it hits you doesn't mean you're sinning. Okay, so you're driving down the road. You see an image that's sinful, or it's something on the internet, or it's a movie that you're watching, and all of a sudden, whoa, and you see something. Are you sinning? Well, the answer is it depends on what you're doing with the image. If you consume it and start to just write a little script and play it out in your mind and revel in it, enjoy it, whatever it is, well, then you're sinning. But just because it gets into your eyeballs, it doesn't mean that you're sinning just because you see something. Now you go looking for it, that's a different deal. But I think that's the line of temptation. The temptation that comes to you most likely is a sin on somebody's part, but it doesn't have to be a sin on your part. And I think that applies to the potty words that are still inhabiting your brain. This is Wretched Radio.
Be honest, when's the last time you shared the gospel with a stranger? Not posted something online, not liked a Christian meme, but actually opened your mouth and told someone about Jesus. If your stomach tightened just a little bit, you're not alone. Most Christians would rather do almost anything than evangelize. It's terrifying. What if they get mad? What if I say something wrong? What if they ask me a question I can't answer? Our resource, Terrified 2, it exists because Jesus gave us the Great Commission, not the Great Suggestion, and he actually gave us the tools to obey it. And this resource will walk you through how to share the gospel with strangers, even family members, without needing Pepto-Bismol to get through it. You'll still be nervous, that's normal, but you'll also be equipped, and equipped beats terrified every single time. Terrified 2, it is streaming right now for free on Fortis Plus. Download the app right now on your smartphone, on your smart TV, or head to fortisplus.org.
Is it possible a Christian university can actually be ranked high when it comes to preparing students for the real world? The hat tip to Masters University. You want to send your kids someplace where they actually still teach the Bible? Not just based on a document that they maybe have in a file cabinet someplace, but they actually use the Bible there. The education at the Masters University, not only biblical, but oh so practical. Courses, diplomas, degrees, they can be achieved online or, of course, on their beautiful campus in Southern California. Would you like to learn more about the Masters University to prepare you or your child for the future? I encourage you to visit masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
Most men don't make one big decision that takes them off course. No, it happens gradually, and eventually you look up and you realize, I've been coasting for years. Well, Dr. Adam Tyson has created Walk Like a Man. It's available now on Fortis Plus. Dr. Tyson knows that's the story for way too many guys right now. And so he gets into God's Word and he lays out what it actually looks like to walk with wisdom and live with real conviction. And the way he teaches it, you'll walk away from every episode knowing exactly what to do and why it matters. This is biblical teaching that puts solid ground under your feet and gives you a clear path forward. It's streaming right now with new episodes dropping every Monday on Fortis Plus for free. Download the Fortis Plus app right now wherever you download apps on your smartphone, your smart TV, or just go to fortisplus.org and walk like a man.
Know your church fathers. Gregory of Nazianzus was the bishop of Constantinople in the 4th century. He wrote important works on the Trinity and the person of Christ. Gregory described the relationship between the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit and taught that Jesus is fully God and fully man. His arguments are still in use today.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Whew. My knucklehead status has been confirmed. Friel, it's been confirmed in our minds for years. This is Wretched Radio. Jimmy, we were just talking about temptations coming in. You know, how far do they get in? When does it become a sin, not a sin?
Right.
I'm going to hold up what was literally on top of my desk. So for the 2 minutes that I was talking about temptation, this was right before my eyes. Can you see this book? What is it called?
Temptation. That's funny.
Well, it would be funny if I weren't so dumb to not remember that it was actually sitting there. This might be helpful. I maybe even highlighted a quote about, you know, how far temptation goes, when it's a sin, when it's not a sin. This was from Free Grace Broadcaster. I think every quarter they send out a book with a theme written by Puritans. So this particular chapter was about how the devil tempts Thomas Manton. He died in 1677. The sin of the devil tempting. Oh, this is it. Look at that. This might be an encouraging word for all of us. If I asked you what the sermon was about last week, would you remember? Maybe. I mean, but you'd probably have to go, okay, hold on. Let me just think for a second. We're in 1 Peter. I know. No, that's Friel's church. You'd have to like really kind of dredge up, like, what was that thing about? Or Sunday school, whatever it is. And maybe you've come to the conclusion, nothing's sticking. Okay, I read this probably a week or two ago. And so my response that I just gave, I think came from what I read a week or two ago. And I didn't remember. That's I don't want to let us all off the hook that we're lazy listeners with preaching, but here's the reality. You've probably heard hundreds, maybe thousands of sermons in your life, and you probably remember almost none of them, but that doesn't mean it's not getting into you. Just because you can't cite a sermon, it doesn't mean that that sermon hasn't affected your life, it hasn't informed your thinking in some way, or it hasn't curbed your morality in another way. That's how it works. So on the one hand, we always want to be diligent listeners, trying to remember this stuff, actively listening. But on the other hand, we don't want to feel terrible because we can't seem to remember everything, because I think I was just an example that's kind of how it works. Just gets in and it informs and it rewires and then it comes out. So here it is from Manton. The sin of the devil tempting must be distinguished from our sin in consenting. Man, I got to tell you, if I hadn't just read that out loud, that's worth plagiarizing and memeing right there. The sin of the devil tempting must be distinguished from our sin in consenting. That's good. If the devil tempts and we consent not, it is his sin. The envious man may throw weeds over the garden wall, but if we do not suffer them to root there, it is not the gardener's fault, but the fault of the envious man. Likewise, the devil may fling in temptations, fiery darts, atheistic or blasphemous thoughts, or potty words. Yet if we throw them out with indignation and give no harbor and entertainment to them there, it is our misery, but the devil's sin. That's perfect. It doesn't mean it's fun. It doesn't mean that the warfare stops. It doesn't mean that the struggle ends, but it's the devil's sin. Being tempted, it ain't a bucket of laughs. I was reading a Valley of Vision prayer, and I think it was called back to my point about remembering specifically. It was a confessional prayer of repentance, and it described the sin, probably the besetting sin that can so often knock on your door, tempt you and taunt you and just make your life torturous. The Puritan writer said, it is my hell. That's what the battle with sin and temptation is. It's like, But that doesn't mean it's your sin. If you don't take it and run with it, it's the devil's sin, if you will. Therefore, if our hearts abhor them at the very first rising, though they be man's cross, they will be put on Satan's account. Man, this guy, he could have been an ex-superstar. He would have been a meme monster with stuff like that. That's super fun. Okay, what do I got here? We'll do this another day. It was helps against temptation. It was the eighth help. If you would not be taken away with Satan's snares and devices, then do this. We'll share that another day. But today, let's go to the mailbag, shall we? idea@wretched.org.
All right, an email from Ryder.
You're not going to affirm any of that man stuff? I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, it was good.
It was. You're faking it.
No.
You weren't even paying attention.
I was paying attention.
Mm-hmm. What was I talking about?
Temptation.
Okay.
It's the name of the book.
I'm glad you remembered.
Ryder emailed in, Todd, what is the difference between having a Christian having a strong conscience and a seared conscience?
Oh, yeah. Well, strong, do you mean well-informed? That's super crucial, because a conscience that's set on high that isn't well-informed is going to be a scrupulous conscience, and that's going to get you into trouble because you're just going to be tortured over everything. Things that aren't a sin, you're going to think are a sin, and round you're going to go. So your conscience, it needs to be informed. So if by strong you mean well-informed, huge thumbs up. A seared conscience, you do not want that. And now, can a Christian ultimately have a seared conscience? I don't think so. I think the seared conscience, that specific level of a weak conscience, I think belongs to the unregenerate. I think I'm going to stick with that for the moment until persuaded otherwise. But you can dial it, you can dial down the strength of your conscience. And all kind, many things can do that to you. But I don't think it can become seared, because once your conscience becomes seared, it's like, well, you're done. You don't care about sin. And unless a supernatural work of God overrules that, you don't care. Que sera, sera. You're going to sin however you want to. How does a Christian keep their conscience strong? Well, I think there's, let's focus on two ways. Number one, knowledge. You need to maintain knowledge. You need to keep learning. You need to keep growing. You need to keep consuming. You need to keep doing the means of growth. That keeps it informed. But I think there's another aspect of it, and that is your relationship with the Lord, your walk with Him. The further you get away from Him, your conscience is going to be less strong, because you're going to be lacking motivation, the communion with God that I believe gives us strength to overcome temptation. So I think working on your relationship with the Lord. All right, here's a third category. Don't play with sin. The more you play with it, it's a crud. Sin is just kudzu. It just gets on you a little bit, just a little bit. And then it takes over and it says, just a little more. And in 6 months, you're looking back going, how did I get here? Well, the answer is, You let sin take root slowly. That is why the second you see it, kill it. Just kill it. Okay, fine. So last week, this is what we preached about it at Alpharetta Bible Church. And that is that seeing sin as just garbage. It's just so bad for you. And that you need to remove it. The Greek word in the text in 1 Peter 2 is the vision of a soldier taking off his armor, or somebody taking off a soiled garment. Get it off of me. That's how we should be seeing sin. We should be seeing sin as something that contorts and deforms us, and it robs us of being Christ-like and the joys that come with it. So when you see sin, even just in its smallest form, don't think, well, it's just a little. As soon as you say that, man, you just stepped on the path of slip sliding away. Be diligent. Be on the alert. See sin as garbage. Remove it constantly. And how do you do that? Well, 1 Peter tells us, by consuming the pure milk of the word, so that you can grow in your salvation, knowing the kindness of the Lord. That's, look, there's other attributes of God, obviously, that we want to and must study. But Peter, in this particular text, is saying, hey, if you want to be battling sin, if you want to be taking out the trash, you've got to study and think about the kindness of God, the goodness of God, the love of God, the mercy of God, the grace of God. And as you do that with him, and as you commune with him in that, as you go about the business of battling sin, consuming the pure milk of the word, your conscience will be increasingly strong and you will be inclined to sin a lot less. This is Wretched Radio.